says it, but I paid the minimum.
Is it not that you want?
All right, take a look at the fact pattern that's on the screen. Question. Do producers of video games, violent movies, do they have a duty to protect victims from harm caused by their, that should be productions, not producers? Why?
Because there's no real correlation between the fact that this guy is a fan of violent video games and movies and then acting out or committing acts of violence. There's no actual correlation.
How do you know?
Just how can you prove that there is?
Well, I don't know.
I think people tend to get influenced by the things that they consume. So I say they can avoid something like this by at least providing a disclaimer so we can wave like it.
Okay.
Like, don't attempt this.
So you're saying no, you're saying disclaimer. Anyone else?
How do you explain to people that are not victims
that couldn't be? That's a very good question. How do you explain the fact that the vast majority of people who consume violence through media, through video games, that they don't engage in violence?
I'm pretty sure certain video games have like ratings or like, you know, age, like there should be for this certain age.
Okay, so video games has a rating system, so maybe there is the disclosure.
I think it's probably the parents' fault, because it's their job to control what their child is doing.
Yeah, blame the parents. Bad parents. It is an old saying that I learned when I started teaching 3 decades ago. You plant potatoes, you get potatoes. Bad parents produce bad kids. Good parents produce good kids. Is that universally true?
No.
No, not at all. You can't blame the parents, because who ultimately is responsible for the consequences of their actions?
They have a better chance of maybe getting a class action lawsuit. A lot of people saying that the video game industry is violent, but the fact that they can't prove that the number of violent incidences caused by the video game are very, very small relative to the sales of the video game. A million people played it, but only one person had a violent incident because of it. The rate isn't high enough that you could definitely prove via preponderance of the evidence that video game producer is more than 50% at
he's only pulling out legal terms. That's very good. Yeah. That's impressive.
All right.
I have a very simple question. Because ultimately, this is the way the court systems operate. What was the rule from Kuhn v. Pubzone? What was the general rule of law? Y'all should have wrote it down in your notes last class. What is the general rule, one of the last things we covered, from Kuhn v. Pubzone?
If there's knowledge expire.
What is the rule?
As a general rule, whoever's in business has no duty to protect the harvest from criminal activity back to the buyer, unless the harvest is committed.
All right. So let's operate from those parameters. As a general rule, owners of a business have no duty whatsoever to protect patrons, customers, from the criminal acts of a third party. Who are the parents suing?
The company.
Did the company shoot the kids?
No.
Did an employee of the company shoot the kids?
No.
Was there any relationship whatsoever in this fact pattern that suggests that Michael Carneal was tied to the company in any way, shape, or form? So would we define him as a third party?
Yes.
All right, why? I heard yes from Carol, but why?
Because he has no ties to the company.
Just exactly what I just said. No ties to the company. No relation. All right. Did Carneal engage in criminal acts? Okay. So as a general rule, the company is not liable. But we did deal with a major exception. Did we not? If the harm is foreseeable. So this is where the court would need to contemplate foreseeability. I think we talked about foreseeability last class, right? What does that mean? What, you raise the window, you look outside, you can see it taking place?
No, you can like predict that it'll happen.
Predictability. What did you say, Carol?
No, same thing.
Predictability, all right. So, how many of you, this is going to sound awful, but I got to ask it this way. How many of you have ever in your lives watched a violent movie? By the way, you can include cartoons in that too, right?
Yeah.
How many of you have played violent video games? How many of you have shot up schools? Is the type of criminal act in which Michael Carneal engaged in, is it reasonably foreseeable? So is there any way that the company can be held liable?
No.
Now, by the way, when we're dealing with a case, do we worry about side questions like the parents being liable?
No.
No, because in order to determine if the parents are being liable, what would have to take place? Would there not have to be a lawsuit where the parents are being sued?
Right.
Do we, when we look at cases, are we concerned with any other possibility? Any other likely scenario other than what's presented before us? Not at all. We have to narrow our focus only on what's provided. So, FYI, the parents were not sued in this case. Now, there are some states that do assess liability for parents. Massachusetts has what's known as a social host law that was put into place about 10 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. So if you have a party at your house and you have underage drinking going on, whether or not mom and dad are aware of it, mom and dad are liable for anything that happens, because the statute has been passed. There are some instances where there is parental liability in certain situations, but it's only in a handful of states. Questions? All right. Every single situation begins with a dispute. A versus B. a dispute. Doesn't matter what the dispute is over. B did something to A and A's not happy. So the question has to be asked is, how do you resolve the situation? And ultimately, that is the primary concern with the area of jurisprudence, the law. One person needs something to another, and we need to figure out how do we solve it. How do we resolve the dispute? Now, in our society, there was a time, not too long ago, when there was, I'm going to put an asterisk here, the solution to resolve the dispute was violence. Back in the days of the Wild West, there were those infamous gunslingers that if they had a beef with someone else, they would literally go out in the streets and they would have a duel. One of the most famous duels in American history changed the political landscape forever. When the Vice President of the United States, Aaron Burr, shot the former Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton. They did it in New Jersey, not New York, because duels were legal in New Jersey. Shot him dead. Why? Burr felt that Hamilton besmirched his honor. Imagine if that was the way everyone could solve disputes today. Someone cuts you off in traffic, and you shoot them. What would society be like? It would be chaotic. Could we have a functioning society? Well, I'll take humor. Go ahead. There'd be a lot less stupid drivers. But here's the thing. Eventually someone's going to think you're stupid, and they're going to get you. No, we cannot have a functioning society. We cannot have a civil society if the way to solve disputes is through violence. So, we have, through lots of trial and error, through lots of failures and restarts and trying again, mulligans if you play golf, we have decided that we're not going to tolerate violence as a means to solve disputes, but rather we are going to engage in what's known as a legal process. Rules are going to be created, enforced, on how we settle disputes. Now, as I told you, and I told you this last class, in order for the legal process to happen, there has to be a legal wrong, right? I told you this at the end of last class. There has to be some type of legal wrong. The law cannot cure everything. I also said at the end of last class, the law looks at the cause of action. What is the trigger that results in the process? And in order for the courts to do something to provide a remedy, the person making the accusation, the plaintiff, must prove their case. Right? I gave you all that, right? That's where we ended off. All right. But here's the problem. And the problem is real. How much time do you want to spend settling dispute? How much money do you have in your bank account to settle the dispute? I'm sure you've all heard in the United States, we are a very litigious society. People sue for any and all perceived slights, regardless of how big or legitimate they are. So the problem is, the courts are only open so many hours a day. And if you have even 1% of society filing claims against another, how do you fit all those cases into a 9-to-5 schedule that the court operates on? How do you do it? And to what extent? How far do you want to allow it to linger on? Because I can tell you one thing, and I'm not exaggerating. The moment my phone goes off, my billable time starts. And I get, depending upon what I do, granted most of what I do is real estate, but most of my legal work involves a billable rate of about $200 an hour. So the more I do for you, the more likely I'm going to be able to win. But do you have the money to pay me? And what are you going to get out of it? That's the other thing to realize. What are you going to get out of it? What is the remedy you're seeking? Is it worth it? So, I'm driving down the road. I have a bunch of bumper stickers on my vehicle. Somebody doesn't like my bumper stickers. So they flip me the bird. I'm offended. How dare they rise the middle finger in my general direction? My feelings are hurt. Should I sue them? What's the point? What's the point? What am I going to get? Nothing. So why waste my time? Because you know something? If you contact a lawyer more likely than not is going to always tell you you have a case. Because whether they win or lose, billable hours. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. So, because of the reality and the growing complexion and the expenses, there has been a new trend in the law, or newish trend, in the sense of dispute resolution. There have been efforts to engage in what is known as ABR. Alternative dispute resolution. ADR. To a degree, yeah, exactly. Judge Judy and other law shows, those aren't real courts. Those are not real courts. Those are artificial forums in which basically both parties kind of agree to just kind of go along with whatever decision was made. But those decisions are not necessarily enforceable in all instances. But do you even need to go to the People's Court? I say no. Because there is a way of dispute resolution that costs nothing. And it's known as negotiation. And by the way, no matter what your claim is, even if you end up in court, the court is always going to begin by asking this simple question. Did you talk to the person you had a dispute with? And did you attempt to mitigate your costs? In other words, did you call the person up and say, hey, yo, I got a beef. Can we settle it? Mono y mono. Negotiation is free. And negotiation could be quick as a 5-minute discussion. But at the end of the day, it's where A and B alone sit down and come to a compromise. They settle their own problems. I'm pissed off at my roommate because he refuses to wash the dishes. I pull him aside one day and like, dude, I'm throwing your shit out the window if you don't wash your dishes. Because you're attracting mice. Roommate says, fine. Dispute resolved. Questions? Alright, well, what happens if you have a little more complicated situation and you have two parties that don't really like one another and really don't want to sit across the table, look each other in the eye, and hash out their differences? Well, you might want to look into mediation. Mediation is a situation where A and B sit down, but C is present. C is a trained individual who will work with the parties to result in a resolution. Not will result, will work together to achieve a resolution. That makes more sense.
Arbitration, the appointment
mediation. I'm not doing arbitration, I'm doing mediation. Mediation is not a formal process. It's where A sits down on one side of the table, B sits down on the other side, and C sits there just to make sure they don't stab one another. Kind of holds their hands and walks them through the process of compromise. It's like going to counseling, would be a good analogy. By the way, divorce is a huge problem in our country. Part of the reason why divorce is such a problem is because people are very narcissistic. And they're unwilling to talk to their spouse if they're unhappy. Because if you talk to your spouse, by the way, I've been married for 27 years. And I'm not saying my marriage has been perfect. But we've had our good days and our bad days, and amazingly, after, no, actually, I'm wrong. We've been married 29 years. Wow, I'm going to give myself some extra credit for that one. And we've been able to survive because as pissed off at me as my wife gets, and vice versa, we try looking at each other in the eye and talking to one another. And yeah, sometimes that results in yelling and swearing and slamming doors. Maybe we go a day or two without talking. But you know what's amazing? We always come back to the center. But if we needed counseling, that would be an example of mediation. Where we would go with somebody who would sit us down and help us talk it out. Now, here's the funny thing. To a degree, negotiation is a win-win. Because the two parties basically figure out their own solution. Mediation also, theoretically, should end up in a win-win. Because the job of the mediator is to help them make a compromise. So one gives a little to the other and vice versa to solve the dispute. And, just like negotiation, this is voluntary. They're not being forced. There's no penalty. going back to Judge Judy, this is what you're actually going through. If you watch those, the People's Court, they're not in arbitration. They're not in a real courtroom. They're just basically agreeing to mediation. Oh. And if you read the terms of all of the apps and stuff you put on your phone, if one of those apps destroys your phone, guess what you've already accepted in the terms of terms and conditions? You've already waived your right to sue the company. You've already agreed to mediation. And usually you have to try to fly to like Wisconsin or something. Why? Because it's free. Or at least cheap. Questions? Well, what happens if you need a more formalized process that has an outcome that is enforceable? Again, not enforceable. Not enforceable. Well, then you go for the third and final form of alternative dispute resolution. Arbitration. Arbitration. This is where the arbiter, typically it's a panel of at least three, has the authority to render a decision. Which means, unlike the other two, there is a winner and a loser. Because a decision is made. This is somewhat of a formal process. Typically, it takes about a week. Both present sides then the panel meets without the parties present and they deliberate. And they render a decision. In writing. That both parties must sign. Why? They must agree to abide by the decision. And what happens if, after the fact, one party does not? You violate, so where are you going to go? Yeah.
So,
if you... Sorry, go ahead, Carol.
It's not a court system, a panel that...
It's not a court system. But there may be lawyers that are the arbiters, because we lawyers, we can get certified with either being a mediator or an arbiter.
So, the mediation, you have one person that...
Just kind of, they sit there and hold their hands.
Right. So, arbitrator, there's a panel with more than one person?
Usually three.
Okay.
Could be five, depending upon the complexity. And by the way, both sides agree to who's going to sit on the panel. And basically, the panel has the power, once they hear both sides, to make a decision. And as I said, it's put in writing. Both parties sign it. Because if either of the parties breach what effectively is a contract, the other party and go to court, and the court will enforce it. Many, many situations that you hear about in the real world end up being decided by, or through, arbitration. So, well, I don't know how old you are if you remembered when it was happening, but I'm sure you have since heard of, and if I use the phrase Deflategate, you know what I'm talking about? That's when Tom Brady and the Patriots were accused of intentionally deflating the balls that the Patriots used so he could get a better grip on the ball and thus be more precise in his passing. That ended up going to arbitration. And I think it was a 5-arbiter panel determined that, yes, he was guilty of wrongdoing, and they fined him, which he had to pay. They also fined Bill Belichick, and I think they fined the Patriots organization for wrongdoing, violating NFL rules. Brady did attempt to appeal it. And they went to an appeals court. Because you can appeal. I should put that down as well. There's a note there. You can appeal an arbitration ruling. But they lost the appeal. And then there was talk that they were going to try going up to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court was not going to hear a case about underinflated footballs. In the business world, many businesses that have disputes try doing arbitration. Why? You can have an attorney. If you want, both parties can have an attorney. But the evidentiary rules of providing evidence, are less. So that's, there's less billable hours. There's less work to do. So if you go to arbitration, you're still going to have to pay an attorney's fee, but it just not one won't be as significant. I have a buddy that does arbitration, and he says most disputes, he's putting in maybe 5 to 10 hours of research. As opposed to if you're doing a case, you could put weeks and weeks and weeks of legal research. Questions? Well, what happens if you have something hugely complex, hugely significant? Well, and you could do the old-fashioned way. You can engage in litigation. FYI, on any given year, there are approximately 2 million cases filed in the federal courts and in excess of 100 million cases filed in the state courts. We like to sue anybody for anything at any given moment. The reason being is, unlike most societies on Earth, we have the right to do so. As crazy it may sound, you have the right to sue somebody if they harmed you. Because as it's etched in stone above the entrance to the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C., equal justice under the law. Equal justice under the law. This is as a capitalistic free market principle as you can get. Government must treat everybody equally. And government can neither reward nor punish the winners or the losers. Every citizen, and yes, I mean as I phrased it, every citizen is treated the same under our legal system. Non-citizens do not have equal standing. So non-citizens may be treated different than citizens, because that's what the law says. And non-legal residents have little to no standing under our legal system. And it's not Lemanic saying it, it's literally in the law. You can look it up. But here's the thing. Regardless of it's a citizen, a legal resident, or a non-legal inhabitant resident, no state can deny those peoples equal and impartial justice under the law. So, all citizens must be treated the same. All legal residents must be treated the same as any other legal resident. And all illegal immigrants must be treated the same as all other illegal immigrants. Nobody can get special treatment. You can't say some are better than others. That's not the way the system works. And, as I said, I don't know if it was last class or the class before, justice does not mean you win. Justice just means you had a fair trial under the law. So you had a chance to prove your case. I'm not trying to be shocking. I'm not trying to bring politics of anything that's going on in the country into the class. I'm just telling you black and white the way it is. Questions? All right. Now, our system is, by nature, adversarial. Our court system, litigation, is a battle where one side is pitted against another in an arena. And the outcome is total victory at all costs. If I am going to sue you, I am going to do everything in my means to completely destroy you. Because I want to win. And how am I going to do it? I'm going to do it by exposing facts. I'm going to bring up your background. I'm going to bring up your history. Heck, I'm going to try to find out the first person you dated. I want to know the names of all of your dogs. I want to know where you lived. I want to know everywhere you worked. I want to know where you went to school. I want to know what grade you got on recess in third grade. Because I'm going to be presenting evidence saying that you are the most vile human scum ever to walk the earth. And as a result, the jury should reward my client because my client is a saint. And by the way, guess what your attorney's doing? The exact same thing that I would do. Because if you go to court, it's not about playing patty cakes. It's not about holding hands and singing Kumbaya, my Lord, Kumbaya. It's about winning. Because win equals remedy. If you cause me harm, The only way I can get a remedy for that harm is if I win. If I can't prove my case and I lose, no remedy will be provided. There's no points for second place. Questions? All right. Well, that begs the question. Who can sue who? Who has the ability to sue who? Anyone? You could sue me. Anyone. Any person. Ever. Is that what you're saying? Any person ever? What? Can you sue somebody out of the country? I don't know. That would be complicated, right? Because if you're going to sue, where are you going to file your claim? Where are you going to file your claim? Oh, you got to file it wherever the crime took place. So if you're trying to sue someone who left the country, are you going to be able to get them back? Probably not. Only in criminal matters. Yes.
I'm going to say, if you sue somebody and they just not show up.
Oh, they could. We'll find out. Go back to the question. Who can sue anyone? What I heard was anyone. What do we mean by anyone?
You don't have the right to do that. It's a matter of you using that.
Well, you're right. You do have the right to sue. Right, that's right. So it's a matter of whether you choose to use that right or not. But I want to know, who can sue who?
Would it be people that fall under the jurisdiction of our courts or citizens?
We'll stop after that first word. People. How would we define people? What is a person?
Adults.
What?
Adults.
We're thinking adults? What?
Well,
what is the necessary component to be considered a person? Okay. All right, fine. Person, a human. Okay. Well, I'll give you that one.
I don't know.
Oh. Again, what is the basic, fundamental characteristic that's necessary to be a human?
Alive.
Thank you. You literally have to have a pulse. And again, I'm not asking who can be sued. I'm asking who can sue. So to sue, you must be alive at the time you file. Someone said an adult. Can a minor sue?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely a kid can sue. But who must sue on behalf of the child? A parent, a guardian, an adult. Okay, so we know that you have to be a living, breathing person. Can a business sue? Why? A business can sue because it's run by people? It's an entity? The law treats the person as an entity, as its own person, because ultimately it's made up of people. Absolutely. So a business can sue. So a person can sue, have to have a pulse. Minors can sue with a guardian. Businesses can sue. Can anyone else sue? A country. Can a country sue?
Yeah.
Yes, a country can sue. Well, let's go down the federalist ladder. What about states?
Yeah.
What about a town? Okay, so government entities that they can sue. Is there anyone else? Well, if a business, we didn't say who is going to be sued. We're starting off with who can sue. And a business can sue. Yes. Anyone else? Possible to sue? I'll be honest with you, I think we covered it all. I can't think of anything else. I would say my dog, but you've already said, no, my dog can't sue. Which is true. But here's the thing. What happens if I take my dog to the vet and the vet accidentally causes harm to my dog? I could sue the vet. And what allows me to sue the vet? Am I suing on behalf of the dog? No, I'm suing because the doctor did damage to my property. So the dog's not suing. It's mine. I'm the one who suffered the harm. But again, I'm a person. The veterinarian is a person. All right. Now, let's focus on this side of it. Who can be sued? Does our metrics change? Can you sue another person?
Yeah.
Can you sue another child? Can you sue a business? Can you sue a country, a state, a town?
Can you sue a dead person on behalf of the stakeholders or the family?
Bam! What happens if the person's dead? Can you sue? Yes. Because you're not going after the person, you're going after the stuff, the estate. Absolutely. Oh, that brings it the other side. Can an estate sue a person?
Yeah.
It depends. It depends. One of the primary disputes with an estate is when whoever the trustee is. Yeah, the beneficiary, the person who is going to receive the estate, feels that the executor or the trustee was basically stealing from the estate. They could actually sue on behalf of the dead person's stuff. I didn't think of that one before, but I'm glad I did. Anything else? Now here's the thing. If a claim is filed by a non-entity, there is no case. The person suing must be legally recognized as an existing entity, person, business, whatever. And the person being sued must be treated as a legally recognized entity. As we said, yes?
So say someone's a publisher, they lost their idea about the Social Security. They have nothing that proves it exists. No one can sue. Like, honestly, you can see
government has records that prove you exist. What happens if you lose that?
Could be.
There's always a way. If a person exists, there's always a way to prove things. All right. As we said last class, what do we call the person who is suing?
Plaintiff.
Very good. The plaintiff. And who do they sue?
Defendant.
Excellent. By the way, we're only doing civil. We're not going to touch the criminal stuff. Only civil. Who determines liability? The court. But who, what part of the court determines liability? What? The jury. The jury's also part of the trial. Jury are known as the trier of fact. They're the ones that are going to hear the presentation of the facts. They're the ones who are going to be instructed on the rules of law. And ultimately, they're going to determine if defendant is liable or not. Now, this is where I'm going to throw you a curveball. FYI, you have an absolute right to a jury in a criminal trial. But in Massachusetts, when you file your claim, you have to request a jury trial for a civil case.
Does that cost anything at all? Or is it just...
No, but it may result in the court rejecting your claim, because if it's complicated, they're more likely to bring a jury. But if it's something minor, why are we going to waste the lives of 12 people? You don't have to pay any more, but you just may not get it. Yeah, because it's not an absolute right. It's a procedural request. All right. Who makes sure all the rules in the court is followed? What? Judge. Judge is the trier of law. Now, FYI, I'm going to put it in here. Another asterisk. If you do not request a jury, or your request for jury was denied, because again, it's a simple case, you will be subjected to what's known as a bench trial, in which the judge hears the facts and makes the decision. Or if it's a real, like say a small claims case, you may just go before a judge magistrate. Just a ranking official in the court who's not a judge, but they're empowered to basically make a decision on the law. Questions? No jury, it's just the judge. So the judge is both the trier of fact and the trier of law. Other questions? By the way, I'm just giving you the lingo, because you're going to see this lingo when I start having you read cases at home. Now, FYI, just because you have a person who've identified, or entity, who've identified another person or entity that they are alleging has caused them harm, that does not mean you're actually going to have a case. Because besides reviewing who can sue who, there are also necessary criteria to sue. These are the important hurdles that you have to overcome to get into the door of the courtroom. There are five of them. The first and most significant hurdle is referred to as standing. Standing. The plaintiff must have standing to sue. Now, what are the basic elements of standing? Well, one, you must have an actual identified defendant. You must know who exactly you are going to sue. You just can't say, well, some dude drove by my house and threw his trash in my yard. Because the court's going to say, who's the dude? And if you say, I don't know, go by. You're all done. You need the name. You need the address. You need some basic level of information where the person you are alleging did you harm can be found. Because, by the way, everyone's entitled to due process. If you can't identify the person who you allege did you harm, the government's not going to go up and just randomly pluck someone off the street and send them down in a court and say, go ahead, plaintiff, sue them. And here's the other thing. The person you are claiming harmed you actually has to be the person who harmed you. If Carol, in a sudden fit of rage, gets up and throws her book across the room and smashes me in the side of the head, can I sue Jose for the damage that was done to my skull? Why not? Maybe I don't like Jose. Maybe Jose has a bigger bank account. Maybe he drives a nicer car. You have to sue the person who did what it is you're claiming was done to you. Because those are the only ones who can be held responsible for it.
What about if, like, somebody else, can someone else claim the liability for what someone else did?
Can someone else assume the liability? Why on earth would you volunteer to be sued because you think Carol is sweet?
Something and the wrong person is getting sued.
The fall for it?
Or two people are in a group probably trouble one person this time.
So you're gonna take the heat for it? If you're named, and the other person, the plaintiff can prove that you did it, even if the other person contributed, yeah, I guess.
Or what if it's there's two people, there's three people, there's two people that are together, one of those two people causes harm to the third person.
Oh yeah, you can do a counterclaim. We'll do that. We'll get there. We're just taking the baby steps. But I'm gonna say yes. But why on earth would you do that? Because I was gonna say, in this particular time in which we live, 99.9% of the people are like, hey, it wasn't me. All right. Any other questions on Stan? All right, two. Second basic criteria to sue. The issue, which obviously is the heart of the matter, must be justiciable. The issue must be justiciable. Which is a convoluted way of saying the court must be able to do something about it. So Carol throws a book at me, gives me a concussion. I have to go to the hospital. I miss time at work. She's not going to be required by the court to come in and render medical aid to my concussion. But the court can charge her for lost wages, medical bills. But let's say Carol, because I think Carol has a mean streak in her, gets up and she says, Lemanic, you're bald, fat, and stupid. Can the court do anything about it? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt. Just because, and again, I know we live in an interesting world in which we're all supposed to be hyper concerned about our feelings and our emotions, and our world is the only world that's out there. But truth be told, the court doesn't give a shit about your feelings, about your emotional well-being. It doesn't. If you are sad, if you are offended, there is nothing the court can do about it. Because let's be honest, there are people in our society today that are weak and soft. And if you tell them, I don't like the shirt that you're wearing, they will crawl up in a ball and they'll make TikTok videos saying, I'm so sad! But can the court do anything about it?
What about in a case where they're defacing the image?
Oh, defamation? That's a different situation. Because that's beyond mere words. And we'll talk about different claims. We'll also talk about instances where words can actually result in emotional distress. Because sometimes people are so nasty that people actually do suffer provable medical conditions. But a simple insult that I'm fat and bald and stupid? Sorry, there's no judge in this country that has a box of tissues at their desk and is going to take them out because I'm sad. Because Carol, this is so mean to me one day. There has to be some type of remedy available under the law. Three. Third criteria is that the issue must be right. There must be rightness present. Now, rightness implies that at a minimum, this is the very bare minimum, that there is at least a provable threat. There must be a provable threat that something is imminent. Put all that in. Something, I'll make it simple, I'll use easier words. Something will happen soon. Here is an example of rightness. Carol is mad because I used her in that last hypothetical. So she threatens that the moment I walk out of the classroom at the end of class, she is going to throw the book at me. Literally. At close range. So it hurts more. As opposed to, Carol says, 37 years from now, I'm going to track you down, I'm going to find you, and throw the book at you. Both have threats. But which is, odds are, more likely to happen? Something that's a few minutes from now, or something that's 37 years out? Why? Okay. But why is the threat treated potentially 37 years down the road not going to be treated the same as something that's imminent?
You could drop dead tomorrow or something else.
Exactly. I could be dead tomorrow. And if I'm dead tomorrow, does that threat mean anything? No. Plus, you think she's going to be even remember the fact that I use her in a hypothetical 37 years from now? No, she's probably going to forget about it. So, again, remember, the threat is the minimum, but more often than not that there's real provable damage. So car got struck, you took pictures of the dent, you had the damage assessed at an auto body shop. That's something that happened now. By the way, What happens if it happened too long ago? Four, issue must not be moot. What did you say? Under the law, there are what's known as statute of limitations. Our legal system has put a clock on the timeliness of you attempting to file a claim. The clock begins the moment you are aware of the damage. And depending upon the nature of the claim, you may have 3, 4, 7, some instances 10 years to file a claim. But if you show up at 5 p.m. on that last day, do you get your day in court? No, because the issue have expired, or has expired. Moot? It's over, it's done with, it ceased to be. It's no longer relevant. I'm not going to make you remember any particular one, because every single cause of action has a different statute that's tied to it on years. But most civil offenses, like a contract breach, a fender bender, most are 3 years. Why? Why don't they want to allow someone forever to file a claim?
System.
Tie-ups. What happens to people's memory the farther you get away from an incident? What happens to substantive evidence the farther you go back? It could get contaminated, it could get lost, it could be manipulated. The courts believe, and I agree, that if something actually happened to you, they want you to be proactive. Because the best opportunity for you to prove your case is, well, it's still fresh. Well, it's just happened. But if you wait, you have a greater chance of not being successful. So don't wait. Other questions on mootness? By the way, if you also do something that mitigates the harm, that you eliminate the harm, you also could use your ability to file a claim. So let's for instance, I'll give you a hypothetical. Let's say you decide, once you're done with Quinsig, you want to go to, I don't know, Holy Cross. Because you're one of the smart people that got the 2 years of cheap college before you go get the 2 years of expensive college. But you are denied access to Holy Cross, and you feel you are discriminated against. But before you decide to go talk to a lawyer and sue Holy Cross, you get accepted to Assumption College. No, sorry, Assumption University. What happens to your claim against Holy Cross? Why is it moot? You were discriminated against. Why is it moot?
Yeah,
you got accepted into another college. You weren't suing Holy Cross necessarily just on the basis that you were discriminated against. No, you were suing them because you were denied entry into a four-year program. Well, if you, during that time, go in and get enrolled in another four-year program, what harm have you actually suffered? Oh no, I didn't get into the college I really wanted to. Guess what? When I was a kid, I applied to Boston College. I didn't get in. I ended up going to the University of Massachusetts out in Amherst. I had a 4-year degree. So just because you don't get exactly what you wanted doesn't mean you have a claim. If you can get something that is similar, the court will believe that you've mitigated the damages, and thus you don't need a remedy. All right, last one, and then we're going to call it a day because our time is almost up. Number five. And this is the big one to a degree. Proper venue. As I believe is discussed in chapter one. Venue's discussed in chapter one, right? Or is that chapter two? The different courts? What? Who did their homework? Did you see when you were reading any discussion of venue in chapter one? Well, I don't know, it might be chapter two. It's been a while since I've read the book. Yeah. You might want to reread chapter one. Yeah. All right, venue. Venue refers to the court that you are filing your claim in. Now, here's the catch. If you go to the Worcester Courthouse and you walk into the front door, you will see that in that one building, there are different courts that sit there. There is the district court, which is kind of like the lower court, in which you may file a criminal, actually you file a civil claim there, because it's going to be the DA that brings the criminal case. But you would go to the district court. If your dispute is less than, I think they upped it to $35,000. But if your claim is over $35,000, then you would go into a different room in the same building. That's the superior court, and file a claim. Or if you're dealing with the will of a dead relative, well, then you would go up, I think, onto the second floor, and you'd go to probate. Or if it's a subject matter involving a minor, then you'd go to juvenile court, which I think is up on the third floor. Or if you have a dispute with your landlord, you would go to the land court, which is on the second floor in the back of the building. Just because you walk into the courthouse, you actually have to go to the proper court based on the nature of your claim. If file claim in wrong court, kiss your case goodbye. Why? Well, Joe mentioned the phrase earlier. Our court system divides subject matters into different venues based upon jurisdiction, authority. So, if you have an issue with the will, the court that has the legal authority to deal with it has jurisdiction is the probate court. Land court handles landlord-tenant disputes. You know, if it's a criminal matter, you're going to go to the district court. If it's a major crime, superior, and so forth. Even if you have 1 through 4, if you submit the paperwork in the wrong court, you don't have your day in court. And by the way, there's no refunds.
Are you able to, like, say that happened? Are you able to
If you submit it, it depends. What's the statute of limitations? If the clock expires on you, you're out of luck.
Will there be anyone directly
to the rights? Oh, 100%. But by the way, there have been instances when even lawyers have misfiled and caused the case to be knocked out.
Could you see your lawyer?
Right.
Yes, you could.
I was about to say that.
Yeah, you actually could. All right, any other questions? Okay. here comes the additional homework. Homework number one, get that book if you haven't. Don't care if it's the gold, fifth edition, don't care if it's the blue. Second level, read chapter one. Is the third degree, reread chapter one. So long as you have accomplished one and two. Okay? See y'all on Wednesday. Thank you for another great class. And by the way, two people came in late. Who came in late? You came in late. Who are you?
Dylan.
Who also came in late? You are Jeremiah. Thank you. Yes?
On account of it's way too cold on this side of the classroom, I'd like to move my seat back over there. Because the vents are like right there.
You're killing me, brother.
Sorry.
I've already scribbled you out. All right, that's fine.
I have to miss class Wednesday because I have to go to court, actually.
Do you have proof?
My mom, I don't know. I have a Zoom meeting at 11.
All right, so what you're going to do, you need to send me some type of proof
okay. That
you were required to go on that hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So an email, something from the court
yeah. That
just shows the time and the date, and I will
call it
an excused absence.
Got it. Thank you.
Oh, that kid is killing me.
Professor, I ordered the book last week,
yeah. But
it still says that it's pending, like it's still waiting to be even shipped. Or,
okay.
So I ordered it, but I'm going to see if I can try to order it through Amazon also to see like
whichever one you get quick.
Yeah, because yeah. It still says awaiting fulfillment.
Wow, that's crazy.
I got the Kindle version on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah, it was like $17 because everything would have been shipped when it got in stock.
Uh-huh.
So I have the Kindle version you can get. And then you can also return it as well. Mm-hmm. So you can
would
buy
that
it
work?
For now.
If you can read the chapters, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Professor.
All right, thank you.